Blog Talk Radio.
I wanted a gun. And when I knew I couldn't get one, I started writing about wanting a gun and driving down to Pasadena on Colorado Boulevard and emptying out its contents onto the middle-aged, well-off, well-dressed pedestrians eating well-made lunches on the sidewalk next to the Steve Madden store, comparing investments, stock options, real estate gentrification techniques, a rich man's equivalent of comparing penis sizes. I wanted a bomb. And when I knew I couldn't make one, I started writing about wanting to make one. And walking down to the court building on Irwin Street in Van Nuys with it strapped to my hate-inflated chest, with all the overpaid, deviant lawyers and conservative right-wing, secretly, sometimes boldly, racist judges and rich business owners, unbothered by the average non-unionized American worker's minimum wage salary, with the bellies of corporations become grossly bloated off of cheap labor, legal or illegal, and I'd run in on a trial-in session and dive into the unsuspecting arms of an unsuspecting judge as he's bringing the highly finished and glossy gavel down, sending off another poor kid to life sentence. Another poor, uneducated, overly experienced kid to federal prison for life for selling drugs three times too many. Blowing up his well-lived, well-fed face into hundreds of indistinguishable red and pink meaty pieces to be splattered on the face of the uncaring and lazy jury, onto the faces of lazy and disenfranchised public defenders, onto the fat, bright faces of prosecuting attorneys, and the once clean, dull brown walls of the courtroom. I wanted a war. And when I knew I couldn't make one, I started writing about wanting to make one, where there are thousands of like-minded people that scare the shit out of me because of their more zealous commitment and fervor, and I would go around kidnapping wealthy bankers, McDonald's CEOs, Coca-Cola corporate executives, promising to set them free if they pay the right price, which we would give back to underrepresented, impoverished areas like Van Nuys, North Hills, and Panorama City, then slice their pork fat throats open and watch their blood as it spills onto the floor, surprising us with its glowing black color and shit odor. And these like-minded people will turn against me, call me weak and compromised. They would execute me, and my last words would be badly timed, lacking the expected proper profundity, meaningless, that all I wanted was a gun.
Alright, thank you very much.
Look, the people you are after are the people you depend on. We cook your meals. We haul your trash. We connect your calls. We drive your ambulances. We guard you while you sleep. Do not fuck with us.
But I'm upper, upper class, high society. God's gift to ballroom notoriety. And I always fill my ballroom, the event is never small. The social pages say I've got the biggest balls of all. I've got big balls, I've got big balls. There's that big balls, and there's plenty big balls. And he's got big balls, and she's got big balls.
But we've got the biggest balls of all.
And my balls are always bouncing, and my ballroom always full. And everybody comes and comes again. If your name is on the guest list, no one can take you higher. Everybody says I've got great balls of fire. I've got big balls. Oh, I've got big balls. There's such big balls. 30 big balls. And he's got big balls. And she's got big balls.
But he's got the biggest balls of them all.
Some balls are held for charity and some for fancy dress. But when they're held for pleasure, they're the balls that I like best. My balls are always bouncing to the left and to the right. It's my belief that my big ball should be held every night.
Oh,
we've got big balls!
Wait.
time has come for me to ride hard and fast.
1985, what I wanted. I wanted. I needed. I did not have. I wanted long, straight, blonde hair. I wanted plump, round breast. I wanted a boyfriend named Chris who played tennis and had excellent improvisation skills to fondle and kiss my breast in his bedroom with his parents in Europe and the Thompson twins on the radio. I wanted to be a cheerleader with 3 swatches on each wrist. I wanted to sit at the cool table in the cafeteria and be in on all the jokes. I wanted a name that no one could make fun of, a safe name like Heather Smith or Michelle Jones. I wanted a closet filled with Guess jeans and Esprit shirts. I wanted to look in the mirror and not see what I saw.
Now, if you all assume positions of subservience, we can complete this caper with a minimum of jeopardy and danger for all.
On your knees, knaves.
Thank you. collect.
It's Michelle. No. I paid at the office.
Who is this?
This is Michelle.
Oh, I'm waiting for Michelle to call, so you're more than welcome to hang around with me until she calls in. She's running a little late.
Okay.
Okay. Well, okay, let's see here. Wait for Michelle, all right. Wait for Michelle. You're not Michelle. Hello?
Hello?
I mean, I've got the phone lines absolutely backed up to the end.
You have to carry me through this. I mean,
and the phone lines are jammed. Jammed.
Oh, man, my phone lines are jammed, so I'd ask you not to tie them up anymore because I am waiting for Michelle to call in.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, Roger. And your name's Roger.
I think she's under...
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Am I there? Hello?
Oh, okay. Yes.
No.
I'll get brave at the end.
Okay.
Okay. This is called Joanna. She takes ass in the face on weekdays in minivans parked on dark corners on a Tuesday night, 1:43 a.m. to be exact. None to be the wiser except she had phoned her friend to say she had taken black nipple in her mouth. Her husband later responds, oh, shit, when told of the news on the daily cell phone call. Pulls a semi-truck over to the side of the road for a quick pull-pull to find himself crying over his diseased cock in his hand. This is how people with no skills get along in life. So she tells me.
Today's topic, let's join now a group of young people at the National Education Program Workshop in Searcy, Arkansas. At the classroom lectern is Dr. Clifton L. Gaines, Jr., noted young historian.
Some of you may be asking yourselves, why should we be bothered with developing citizenship responsibilities? Well, there are many reasons. One of the primary reasons is that great principles do not live from generation to generation without being nurtured, without being kept vigorously alive. Unless we understand and work effectively for the principles upon which our American way of life is founded, the structure will crumble and our heritage of freedom will perish. Another primary reason for the development of citizenship responsibility is that we are living in an era marked by the growth of socialism. A third major reason for accepting our citizenship responsibilities and working at them is the presence within America of socialist and communist propagandists dedicated to the establishment of a new order. The communist fifth columnists among us are working for world dictatorship. To accomplish this, their strategy is to undermine the confidence of our people in the American system and the principles on which it stands. The socialists among us seek to bring about a gradual change in our system by gradually destroying the principle of the private ownership of property and substituting the socialist principle of government ownership. Now let's be practical for a moment.
Kids have to be warned that there's bullshit coming down the road. That's the biggest thing you can do for a kid. Tell them what life in this country is about. It's about a whole lot of bullshit that needs to be detected and avoided. That's the best thing you can do. No one told me. No one told me a thing like that. I was never warned about any of this. I had to find all of it out for myself. And there are still, as with you probably, a lot of things that you're expected to believe and accept in America that I personally have a problem with, and I question a lot of these things. Give you an example. I saw a slogan on the guy's car that said, "Proud to be an American." And I thought, well, what the fuck does that mean? Proud to be an American. You see, I've never understood national pride. I've never understood ethnic pride. Because I'm Irish, and I'm all four of my grandparents were born in Ireland, so I'm fully Irish. And when I was a kid, I would go to the St. Patrick's Day Parade. And I noticed that they sold a button that said, "Proud to be Irish." And I could never understand that because I knew that on Columbus Day, they sold a different button that said, "Proud to be Italian." Then came Black Pride and Puerto Rican Pride. And I could never understand ethnic or national pride. Because to me, pride should be reserved for something you achieve or attain on your own, not something that happens by accident of birth. Being Irish... Being Irish isn't a skill. It's a fucking genetic accident. You wouldn't say I'm proud to be 5'11". I'm proud to have a predisposition for colon cancer. So why the fuck would you be proud to be Irish or proud to be Italian or American or anything? Hey, if you're happy with it, that's fine. Do that. Put that on your car. Happy to be an American. Be happy. Don't be proud. Too much pride as it is. Pride goeth before a fall. Never forget Proverbs, okay? Now, here's another slogan. Here's another slogan you run into all the time. God bless America. Once again, respectfully, I say to myself, what the fuck does that mean? God bless America? Is that a request? Is that a demand? Is that a suggestion? Politicians say it at the end of every speech, as if it were some sort of verbal tick that they can't get rid of. God bless you and God bless America. God bless you and God bless America. I guess they figure if they leave it out, someone's going to think they're bad Americans. Let me tell you a little secret about God, folks. God does not give a flying fuck about America, okay? He doesn't care. He never cared about this country. He never has. He never will. He doesn't care about this country any more than he cares about Mongolia, Transylvania, Pittsburgh, the Suez Canal, or the North Pole. He simply doesn't care, okay? He doesn't care. Listen, good. There are 200 countries in the world now. Do these people honestly think that God is sitting around picking out his favorite? Why would he do that? Why would God have a favorite country? And why would it be America out of all the countries? Because we have the most money? Because he likes our national anthem? Maybe it's because he heard we have 18 delicious flavors of classic Rice-A-Roni.
Rice. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. Rice-A-Roni, the flavor can't be beat. One pan, no boiling, cooking ease.
A flavor that is sure to please.
Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
Rice-A-Roni, the delicious break from potatoes.
One pan, no boiling, cooking ease.
A flavor that is sure to please.
Rice. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
Is the American way of life worth bothering about? That is, with a viewpoint of self-interest. Well, let's see. We know that under the stars and stripes, we have more freedom than do civilized people on Earth. Our freedom stems from the fact that America is a republic, founded on a constitution, and dedicated to the principle of democracy, and the worth of the individual.
The people rule.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Standing out in the crowd in a red blazer, black skirt, and heels, attorney Elizabeth Ritter received some media coverage 3 years ago at a free trade protest when she was shot with rubber bullets in the back and a leg. Her beef wasn't with the trade summit, but with a strong police presence. Minutes later, she took another rubber bullet on her forehead as she crouched behind her homemade sign that read, "Fear Totalitarianism."
Is it okay?
Don't get around me. Let them see it.
Get her in the face!
Now her case is back in the news because of this.
The good news about being able to watch you guys live on TV is that lady with the red dress.
A police video shot after the shooting incident just released following a review of excessive force complaints at the protest.
I don't know who got her, but when
we don't know. It was, yeah.
When it went through the sun, it hit her smack dab in the middle of the head.
Attorney Ritter says she was too scared to file a complaint before, but now she intends to sue for excessive force.
I was cowering with a poster behind me, but my fingers were in front of the poster. I believe they thought that my face would have reasonably concluded that my face was behind that poster, and that's why they fired that shot.
The Broward Sheriff's Office says Ritter's possible civil rights lawsuit prevents them from talking specifics. Officers at the scene tell CNN they warned the crowd to move back. Ritter disputes that.
Can you say whether you stand by the events of that day?
Yes,
the shooting
we
of,
do.
The shooting that day?
Yes, we do.
Picked up from the street of Miami from one of the scurrying cockroaches.
Oh, cool.
Wow. Police are red-faced about their video.
Do you think that that tape paints a pretty picture?
No, I don't. Those comments shouldn't have been made. I should have stopped them, and I recognize that.
No officer has been charged or disciplined in Ritter's rubber bullet incident, nor is it under investigation. Susan Candiotti, CNN, Miami.
I believe the children are our future.
It wasn't me, man.
Teach them well, let them lead the way.
I want to kiss from John F. Berry mouth. It tastes like Chardonnay.
If a choice will make you, we'll stay your whole life.
Oh, take it home. Take it home, baby.
Tom Waits. Tom Waits.
This shoe would make a brow of me.
I thought that was Bruce Springsteen.
I don't know. That was kind of Tom Waits.
Oh.
Let God give it.
Michael Grover, take it. Take what? brother.
Teach him well and let them lead the way.
I believe you will be kissing where the world is crying. Education will make it easier. Let the children build dolls.
We cannot sing We Are the World because we are not voting dance.
We are all the children.
And the charge will make it.
It's just like the fella says,
Tell me quick, another kick in the head. Red, that's a kick in the head.
You're getting a combat fatigue, girl. You've been up on that line a long time.
Oh, what a silent
thing she said to me was, don't say a word, my darling, I know how you feel. It's been years since I looked at you this way. And if I hurt you, please forgive me. Love makes you do funny
day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, I need someone who can flip this for a quick buck. So God made a banker. God said, I need someone who doesn't grow anything or make anything, but who will borrow money from the public at 0% interest and then lend it back to the public at 2% or 5% or 10% and pay himself a bonus for doing so. So God made a banker. God said, I need someone who will take money from the people who work and save and use that money to create a dot-com bubble and a housing bubble and a stock bubble, an oil bubble, and a commodities bubble, and a bond bubble, and another stock bubble, and then sell it to people in Poughkeepsie, and Spokane, and Bakersfield, and pay himself another bonus. So God made a banker. God said, I need someone to build homes in the swamps and deserts using shoddy materials and other people's money, and then use these homes as collateral for a Ponzi scheme he can sell to pensioners in California and Michigan and Sweden. I need someone who will then foreclose on those homes, kick out the occupants, and switch off the air conditioning and the plumbing, and watch the houses turn back into dirt, and then pay himself another bonus. God said, I need someone to lend money to people with bad credit at 30% interest in order to get his stock price up, and then, just before the loans turn bad, cash out his stock and walk away. And who, when asked later, will with a tearful eye say the government made him do it. God said, I need somebody who will tell everyone else to stand on their own 2 feet, but who will then run to a government for a bailout as soon as he gets into trouble, and who will then use that bailout money to help elect a Congress that will look the other way, and then pay himself another bonus. So God made a banker.
Things you own end up owning you. Things you own end up owning you.
can hardly wait. And more, much more than this. This is capitalism. Capitalism.
My firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I'm Dr. Zillman, and I'd like to talk to you about your testes. The human testicle is not unlike a balloon. Sometimes it is empty. And sometimes it is full. And sometimes it can explode.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Here's all you need to know about men and women. Women are crazy, men are stupid. And the main reason women are crazy is that men are stupid. It's not the only reason, but it's a big one. And by the way, if you don't think men are stupid, check the newspaper. 99% of all the truly horrifying shit going on in this world was initiated, established, perpetrated, and enabled or continued by men. And that includes the wave and the high five, two of history's truly low points. But as I say, besides knowing that men are stupid, it's also important to remember that women are crazy. And if you don't think women are crazy, ask a man. That's the one thing men aren't stupid about. They know for sure, way down deep in their hearts, that women are straight out fucking nuts. But it doesn't just happen. It isn't an accident. Women have good reason to be nuts. The main one being that in the course of life, compared with men, they have far more to put up with. They bear greater burdens. Think of it this way. In the big cosmic cafeteria, as human beings move down the chow line of life, and reach that section where the shit is being spooned out, women are given several extra portions. Now please understand, my motives here are not selfish or personal. I'm not saying all this stuff to get in good with women, although an occasional blowjob would be nice. But it's not a requirement. It's optional. BJO. Blowjob optional. No, I just think it should be evident to any person who's being honest and thinking clearly that women carry a lot more of life's baggage than men. To begin with, they're smaller and weaker, so they get slapped, punched, raped, abused, and in general get the shit beat out of them on a rather regular basis. By men, of course, who are stronger. If women were stronger, this wouldn't be happening. Men would not raise a hand if they thought the balance was more equal. They'd back down quickly. Then again, if women were stronger, they'd probably be beating the shit out of men just for the fun of it. It's only fair.
Oh, good grief.
Will you do this for me? I don't go to church, but we'll pray sometimes, like now. I never ask anything for myself, only for others. But like any mother, I worry about my children. Please, God, when my daughter was leaving Montana in a fury because she's 18 and no longer wants anybody to tell her what to do, please, God, calm her. Make her drive easy, let her mature, and make her stay in Reno with her grandparents and brothers. Make her go to college and get a good job. Let her be happy. Please, God, don't let her drive past Reno on down towards Las Vegas, where her best friend says, great jobs here. No need for college. Become a pole dancer and buy big boobs and you'll make more money than you ever dreamed possible. Please, God, will you do this for her? Will you do this for me? Or will you merely slip a dollar bill in her G-string?
Let me tell you what Like a Virgin is about. It's all about a girl who digs a guy with a big dick. The entire song is a metaphor for big dicks.
No, it ain't. It's about a girl who's very vulnerable. She's been fucked over a few times, and then she meets a guy.
Whoa. Time out, Green Bay. Tell that fucking bullshit to the tourists.
Toby, who the fuck is Toby?
Like a Virgin is not about some sensitive girl who meets a nice fella. That's what True Blue's about. No, granted, no argument about that.
What's True Blue?
You ain't heard True Blue. It's a big ass in from the... I don't even follow that top of the pop shit. And even I've heard True Blue.
Yeah, so he was saying her that, you know, while I asked, how's it go? Excuse me from not being the world Madonna.
Personally, I can do without her.
I used to like her early stuff. Borderline. When she got out into that Papa Don't Preach phase, I tuned out.
But you guys are, like, making me lose my train of thought here. I was saying something. What was it?
Oh, Toby's that little Chinese girl. That was her last name.
What's that?
It's an old address book I found on a coat I haven't worn in a cool's age. What was that name?
What the fuck was I talking about? The True Blue was about a guy, tells a girl who meets a nice guy, but like a virgin with a metaphor for big dick. Okay, let me tell you what like a virgin is about. It's all about this cooch who's a regular fuck machine. I'm talking morning, day, night, afternoon. Dick, 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 dick.
How many dicks is that?
A lot. So one day, she meets this John Holmes motherfucker, and it's like, whoa, baby. I mean, this cat is like Charles Bronson in The Great Escape. He's digging tunnels. All right, now she's getting this serious dick action. And she's feeling something. She ain't feeling something. Pain. Pain.
Chew, Toby, chew.
It hurts. It hurts her. It shouldn't hurt. You know, her pussy should be bubbling up by now. But when this cat fucks her, it hurts. It hurts just like it did the first time. You see, the pain is reminding a fuck machine what it was once like to be a virgin. Hence, like a virgin.
Oh, well, now, kiss my bread!
My mind.
This is Aldous Huxley, a man haunted by a vision of hell on earth. A searing social critic, Mr. Huxley, 27 years ago, wrote Brave New World, a novel that predicted that someday the entire world would live under a frightful dictatorship. Today, Mr. Huxley says that his fictional world of horror is probably just around the corner for all of us. We'll find out why in a moment.
The Mike Wallace Interview, presented by the American Broadcasting Company in association with the Fund for the Republic, brings you a special television series discussing the problems of survival and freedom in America.
Good evening, I'm Mike Wallace. Tonight's guest, Aldous Huxley, is a man of letters, as disturbing as he is distinguished. Born in England, now a resident of California, Mr. Huxley has written some of the most electric novels and social criticism of this century. He's just finished a series of essays called Enemies of Freedom, in which he outlines and defines some of the threats to our freedom in the United States. And Mr. Huxley, right off the bat, let me ask you this. As you see it, who and what are the enemies of freedom here in the United States?
Well, I don't think you can say who in the United States. I don't think there are any sinister persons deliberately trying to rob people of their freedom. But I do think, first of all, that there are a number of impersonal forces which are pushing in the direction of less and less freedom. And I also think that there are a number of technological devices which anybody who wishes to use can use to accelerate this process of going away from freedom, of imposing control.
Well, what are these forces and these devices, Mr. Hudson?
I should say that there are two main impersonal forces. The first of them is not exceedingly important in the United States at the present time, though very important in other countries. This is the force which in general terms can be called overpopulation, the mounting pressure of population pressing upon existing resources. This, of course, is an extraordinary thing. Something is happening which has never happened in the world's history before. I mean, let's just take a simple fact that between the time of the birth of Christ and the landing of the Mayflower, the population of the earth doubled. It rose from 250 million to probably 500 million. Today, the population of the Earth is rising at such a rate that it will double in half a century.
Well, why should overpopulation work to diminish our freedoms?
Well, in a number of ways. I mean, the experts in the field, like Harrison Brown, for example, pointed out that in the underdeveloped countries, actually the standard of living is at present falling. The people have less to eat and less goods per capita than they had 50 years ago. And as the position of these countries, the economic position, becomes more and more precarious, obviously the central government has to take over more and more responsibility for keeping the ship of state on an even keel. And then, of course, you're likely to get social unrest under such conditions, with again an intervention of the central government. So that I think one sees here a pattern which seems to be pushing very strongly towards a totalitarian regime. And unfortunately, as in all these underdeveloped countries, the only highly organized political party is the Communist Party, it looks rather as though they will be the heirs to this unfortunate process, that they will step into the power, position of power.
Well, then, ironically enough, one of the greatest forces against communism in the world, the Catholic Church, according to your thesis, would seem to be pushing us directly into the hands of the communists because they are against birth control.
Pope Paul has decisively dealt with the questions about birth control raised in the last few years. Although the document itself is not infallible in form, it is nevertheless the authoritative teaching of the Church, which rests on an unbroken tradition going back to the beginning of Christianity.
He acknowledges that this encyclical, which has caused so much dispute, is not infallible. And then he goes on to say that it is, however, authoritative. I think even you gentlemen of the press who are not theologians could sense that there is something of a problem here when a doctrine which is fallible, that is possibly wrong, is authoritative, and that it takes a considerable amount of work for us theologians to explain just how bound people are in their consciences. If an individual discovers that this fallible doctrine is wrong, and that individual is a priest, is he then expected to serve the truth, or is he expected to serve the official position as it has been announced? We are not intending to meddle into the internal affairs of a sister church. We are concerned that the wider ministry of an ecumenical understanding of the Christian faith be deeply understood by saying that poor people have a chance to hear all sides of an issue as crucial as the birth control issue. It is not my intention to say that the Pope and the Cardinal do not have the right, and by all means they must present what they consider to be the authentic teaching. But it is my consideration that when a pastor, fulfilling his understanding of conscience and teaching in the black community, that the issues must be clearly understood.
I think that he did this out of a mistaken notion of what it means to be traditional. And I believe that, unfortunately, his idea is to be in keeping with previous papal encyclicals rather than with the growing and living tradition of the church as it's reflected in the lives of its faithful people in decisions they have to make.
The encyclical is not harsh with people who honestly try to fulfill, please note the words, the high moral standard of chastity in marriage, but who fail through weakness.
Mother of nine this morning, and I think her answer may be typical. She said that this was a disaster, and it wasn't in terms of her own personal life that she was talking about it. She meant that it was a disaster in terms of the meaning of the church for the rest of the world.
Pope Paul reminds us, quote, Christ was absolutely unbending with sin, but merciful and patient with sinners.
Confessors are obviously far more aware of the real moral problems than the Pope is. And it seems to me that just as some people will not feel it necessary to go to confession, and some will, that the unfortunate habit of shopping around for a confessor will be on the increase among those who feel that they do have to go.
Those who imagine the Catholic Church will ever reverse herself in this matter are mistaken.
And I feel that this is a very sad day for the Church if the only kind of obedience that is going to be accepted is one which is without complete intellectual adherence, and that seems to be the way it is.
I will accept nothing less than mahogany.
There is no substitute for Diana Ross.
No.
Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
What has changed is attitudes about it and about its role in life. Now, our college students, according to the studies, are very clearly not going to prostitutes. That is, the males are not going to prostitutes. This is one enormous change in behavior as between my generation and the present generation. But also, accompanying this change, that is, sex, if you have any kind of sexual behavior, is with, let's say, the girl next door rather than a paid prostitute, it is a more personalized thing. It is far less of an exploitive thing. It is something you don't go into casually. I resist the word casual, definitely, on behalf of the younger generation. It is a relationship. And therefore, I think that it behooves adults to understand the struggles of the young people to elevate sexual behavior, let me put it that way, outside of marriage, the same kind of sexual behavior that the generations have always had.
We have a sexual ethic which is the joke of the world. We are laughed at in every country of the world for our attitudes towards sex. The United States is living out some mad Protestant 19th century dream of human behavior. Instead of saying, aren't we wicked because we have a high divorce rate, or aren't we wicked because men like to go to bed with men and women like to go to bed with women, why not begin by saying that our basic values are all wrong? The idea of marriage is obsolete in our society. Everybody knows it. There are natural monogamous. There are people who indeed enjoy one another's company. But can you imagine a man and a woman who are told that for 60 years they're going to have to live together and have sex only with one another? This is nonsense. Why not begin by accepting the fact what human beings really are, men and women, which is we are open. We have something that André Gide referred to as floating sensuality. We can be aroused by this, by that, not necessarily by men, not necessarily by women. So let us begin with the reality of human relations and not start talking about moral fiber, because we're not living out this mad 19th century dream of that everybody, we must go in Noah's Ark in twos. One male, one female, and for 60 years in one another's company. This is what's at fault. This is breaking down, and I think that the so-called the breaking of the moral fiber of the country, these commentators speak of, is one of the healthiest things that's begun to happen.
I'm the happiest sandwich in the world.
Missed it by that much.
We have a lot of problems in the world, but the main problem is the fact that I can't dance. This is the politics of modern dance. On the news, they are talking about war. Blah, blah, blah. I find it all very depressing. What the American people should damn well be worried about is me on the dance floor. Move over, Fred Astaire. I wasn't blessed with the gift of tap. When they blew up the World Trade Center, my feet were the bomb they never saw coming. They're going to send our boys to a land I've never seen, and I can't two-step. I once told a woman that great poets can't dance, and she just laughed, saying that I must be the greatest poet since Shakespeare. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I don't care. It's just that I might want to get married someday. And the thought of that first dance freaks me out more than any stray bullet that might hit everything but my feet. What the troops need is someone like John Travolta as a drill instructor. How ironic. I don't imagine George W. can dance any better than I can. And lately I've been thinking that all our problems can be boiled down to a simple lack of rhythm. So you won't catch me doing one last tango in Paris, Texas. My steps would be the shot heard around the world, louder than the screams from any fallen shuttle. So when everything passes, or until we experience the kind of end that Jim Morrison must have been talking about, I'll just send a silent prayer to Mr. Bojangles, who must be rolling over in his grave with the knowledge that America can no longer get by on fancy footwork.
mic stand. I've been memorizing it. And Bradley Manning were known for, basically like uncovering the fact that like American soldiers were slaughtering innocent Iraqis, and among them journalists. And I'm a journalist major, so it kind of like touched a nerve. And the other fact is like a majority of the soldiers that are in the American Army, the Navy, the military, happen to be people of color. So it's sadly ironic and historically poetic that the rich are hiring poor people of color to kill other poor people of color.
Yeah.
So the poem's called The American Soldier. As the American soldier locks his sight on Iraqi journalist in New Baghdad, thought to have AK-47s, does he know that the oil used to keep his gun greased is silicone-based? Does the soldier know that silicone is made of tiny beads, like sand? Does he know that? That the same desert sand floor that absorbs the Iraqi journalist spilled blood is one and the same as the oil that he uses to caress, to maintain, to hug, and handle the Apache's mounted machine gun, breathing in slowly and pulling the trigger softly, while exhaling, feeling the percussion, the automatic shots reverberating throughout the metal body of the Apache, through his arms, through his chest. As the American soldier that is of Mexican descent, with light brown skin and dark brown hair and eyes, locked his sight on Iraqi journalists thought to be armed with RPGs in New Baghdad, who shared his same identifying characteristics. Does he think about Iraqi families celebrating birthdays with grilled, heavily marinated meat and beer, the kids playing soccer while brothers fight over politics, the music of culture loudly played for the entire block to hear, neighbors wanting or not? As the American soldier is used as an instrument of destruction, of racism, occupation, and imperialism, does he think about going back home where his family is being persecuted for having accents in Arizona, a last name that ends with Ed? But he doesn't think about that. He doesn't think about the sand and the gun oil and the tiny beads that make up the oil, that the innocent man he looks down upon and slays in New Baghdad resembles his uncle, his cousin, his father, himself. But he does not know that. That borders, race, country, the sense of detachment, religion, pride, hate, however patriotic, is a myth. So that the American soldier can make the correlation. So that he sees the oneness, the impact that he has, and the impact that the world has had upon him. Not a single moment should pass with silence. Peace should be illegal. Not a single American flag should fly upright. Not a single military recruitment center should remain standing. Thank you.
Oh, I get by with a little help.
But the real excitement, of course, is going to come at the end of the summer, during Sexual Awareness Week. We import 200 hookers from around the world, and each camper, armed with only a thermos of coffee and $2,000 cash, tries to visit as many countries as he can. And the winner, of course, is named King of Sexual Awareness Week and is allowed to rape and pillage the neighboring towns until camp ends.
Drugs are bad. You shouldn't do drugs. If you do them, you're bad. Because drugs are bad, okay? It's a bad thing to do drugs, so don't be bad by doing drugs, okay? That'd be bad. And drugs are bad.
Hey, kiddies, gather around. The man with the goodies is here. Here's a little beauty for me to Udy. Just inhale and sniff. It is aeroplane glue. Oh, one whiff, man.
Isn't it true that sniffing glue can damage your liver and kidneys?
Cool it, kid. Look here. Amphetamines, bennies, dexies, meth.
They say amphetamines can cause something like schizophrenia.
Schizophrenia. In most cases, it does not last. Cool it, kid. Now for the barbs. Neato, nice, he's a downer.
Withdrawal from barbiturates can cause convulsions.
Will you convulse yourself out of here? Grass. Anything wrong with pot?
They're not sure yet. They just started studying about it.
Worry wart. Dig, everybody. L.S.D.
Bad trips and a chance of chromosome damage.
How do you know you got chromosomes?
Everything you got there can hurt you, can't it?
Sure, kid. Why do you think they call it dope? Hey, where's everybody going?
There are times when you get suckered in by drugs and alcohol and sex with women, okay? But it's when you do these things too much that you become an addict and must get back in touch. You can do it, it's all up to you, okay? With a little plan, you can change your life today. You don't have to spend your life addicted to smack, homeless on the streets, giving handjobs for crack. Follow my plan and very soon you will say, it's easy, okay? Step one, instead of ass, say buns, like kiss my buns or you're a buns hole. Step two, instead of shit, say poo, as in pull poo poo, head in his poo is cold. Step three, with bits, drop the tea, cause Vic is Latin for generosity. Step four, don't say fuck anymore, cause fuck is the worst word that you can say, so just use the word okay.
We can do it, it's all about
okay. Okay.
With a little plan, we can change our lives today.
You can change today.
Fuck is the worst word that you can say. Fuck is the worst word that you can say.
You specialize more in night game.
Yes.
What three things do guys have to remember when they're out in a busy, crowded nightclub?
It's very important. It's actually, there are five, but I'm trying to... Okay, I'm going to downsize the three for you. All right, the most important you need to remember is you're going out to have fun. You're not going out to spend all your night try talking to girls. If you do that, you're going to put so much pressure on you. Go out there to make good, great conversations, meet great people. As a bonus, talk to really hot girls, get their numbers. Because if you have that attitude about you, all your conversations are going to be more relaxed and you're going to have better results. So whenever I go out, that's what I do. The second thing, you have to stand out from the crowd. I'm not talking about, painting your nails, dressing like in a comp and everything. What I'm saying is that, you need to dress well. It's very important. We are not talking about buying a brand, material, spending thousands of pounds on your clothes. What I'm talking about is, dressing a bit differently from everyone else. That's going to look good on you, but also make you stand out from the people. And also, having great conversations, great interactions within the club. So,
social proofing.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, social proofing is something for night game. You can't do that in the day, but night time, definitely, I think it's very strong.
Definitely.
When a woman sees a guy who's friends with everybody in the club, he's instantly more attractive.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not as social as I am, or if you're not as high energy as I am, because not everyone is, you need to find the key people in the club. They could be the promoter, who has an amazing table going on, just going and saying hi, having like 10, 15 seconds of conversation. If you do that, you can talk to his girls in the table, right? It's very simple. And I heard that some people turn this into a huge kind of a DVD training set. But it's really easy, simple. And then you could go and say hi to the club managers and the waiters, the waitresses, and then also really beautiful people in the club. I'm not talking about girls only. I'm talking about guys as well. Because it's very important. You could be only talking to four or five key people in the club. Your social value would be as high as someone who knows half of the club sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
And the third thing, of course, is doing insane things every now and then. You have to try, you have to be comfortable trying risky stuff. Because
mm-hmm.
I always say nice is boring. I think that's what you said as well.
Yes, nice is bland, forgettable,
definitely.
Replaceable.
Be good, and also be crazy.
I am not a hooker. Not a hooker.
It's a cycle. It's a vicious cycle.
I don't even have a gag reflex.
We got a winner.
We got a winner.
I said, we got a winner.
We got a winner.
We got a winner.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. You hear that? Yeah, that's internet porn.
Yes. Oh,
and you know what I'm about to do? I'm about to do something very groundbreaking.
Oh,
I'm about to read some poetry while trying not to be distracted by the internet porn streaming on my laptop. All right?
Yes.
It's kind of like special and emotional to me, but God damn it. My name is Brian W. Fugier. And I speak with an English accent sometimes because, English people settled my world. So here I go. Try not to be distracted. Try not to whack off. I mean, okay, oh, God, I know I'm about to, break the law in, 17 states and shit.
Oh, God, I'm gonna cry.
For the sake of art. But, oh, shit. Here I go. All right. Listen. My poem is Darwinian Nuns and Embryo Orphanage. Atheists disguised as scientists are breeding Darwinian nuns in the embryo orphanage. Well, every night, someone in the world, a remarkable 2.7 million kamikaze moths perish as a result of dive-bombing porch lights. And contrary to popular belief, 9 out of 10 laboratory monkeys prefer to copulate missionary style. In an astonishing 75% of all proctologists moonlight as puppeteers. And an even more astonishing 73% of all puppeteers moonlight as proctologists. In fucking poem! Okay. Alright. I'm focused. I'm very focused. The next poem is Doomsday Cults and Skinny Caramel Lattes. Yeah. Keep it down there, bitch. Doomsday Cults and Skinny Caramel Lattes. 6:37 p.m. The cafe reeks of dead masses and still cigarettes. My mouth does. Bitch, keep it down! 6:37 p.m. The cafe reeks of dead matches and stale cigarettes. My mouth tastes like a salmonella sandwich. And all I got is a cold cup of coffee and yesterday's paper. A Bible study group congregates at the next table. There's at least a dozen of them, young, tattooed, and pierced, sipping on skinny caramel lattes and cappuccinos. Their heads nod in unison to a chorus of amen. Well, their eyes blaze with pent-up holy firewater. Fire water or whatever, fire, begging to be released, whatever, who cares? They join hands and engage in a round of prayer that gradually disintegrates into conspiratorial whispers, stifled giggles, suspicious glances, and I am seized by a sudden paranormal something, I don't know. You know what? God damn, stop. Keep it down, bitch. Keep it down. You're distracting me. Ah, whatever. In poem, I fucked that poem up.
I'm sorry. Oh, yes.
All right, here's my next poem. Coffee at the Two Cup Cafe. My waitress, Irene, is a bulldog brunette with a mouthful of canceled teeth and a smile naked as a Sunday sunbeam. She leans over the table to refill the coffee, and I catch an eye full of breath so close I can feel the heat gathering in her cleavage. Oh, my God. My libido makes a hasty alcohol-addled assessment. Note, Irene's breast, pendulous yet fun. Not bad for a woman pushing 50.
Oh,
just then, the drunken sailor at the next table pinches her ass. She yelps, misfires, and I find myself with a lap full of scalding hot Colombian breakfast blend. She attempts to apologize as I frantically fan my crotch, but her voice gets lost somewhere else as her face is swallowed by the phlegm-basin cackle of a smoker's laugh. In fucking poem, I ended at least one poem, right? God damn, internet porn is too damn distracting. In fucking poem. Yeah, I'm coming too. All right. That's it.
If you like their pop music, you'll love their popcorn. It's pure punk. Remember how Johnny got his name? Prize out your fillings on a chewy rotten bar. Thirsty for a change. Quench it with Anachiora. Feeling uptight, violent, or tense? Why not take it out on a sizzling vicious burger? The riffle ball that gives as good as it gets.
Yeah. Condition to that word. You know the meaning of obscenity, don't you? Perhaps you don't. See, if I do a disgusting show, we'll use any disgusting word. I'm just going to be talking about pork. That's my right, you see, as an American citizen, to discuss pork on stage. Although disgust, all of you vegetarians and Jews and Muslims, that is my right. And if you communists would like to suppress that right to talk about ham and pork, that's your right. Now, if I do a vulgar show, I sing rock and roll tunes. Just in the most vulgar form, with a big bulbous nose, that is not obscene. Obscenity has one specific meaning: to appeal to the prurient interest, to get you horny. That's it, obscenity. Yes. See, if that's why strippers get arrested for being obscene. They come out and they do a horny dance. The viewer gets horny and rapes somebody who didn't see the show. That's why we have the laws. So obscenity does have one specific meaning, and only those illiterate that are offended. And if, quote, Drew Pearson's a son of a bitch, I'd like to introduce you to my aunt, and this is her husband. What's he do for a living? He's a businessman. He's a son of a bitch. Not very nice of you. If you don't even know the man, to make a generality. I tell you, all businessmen are son of a bitches. Are you kidding me? In fact, my father told me that. My father told me that all businessmen are son of a bitches. I never believed my father until now. What's your name? JFK. Your initials allude, I see. That is a direct quote, Time Magazine, London Observer. The President John F. Kennedy said during the SEAL strike, my father once told me that all businessmen are son of a bitches. I never believed my father until now, unquote, President Kennedy. Now, we have two presidents that use the word son of a bitch. Truman with Drew Pearson. Now, supposing we have an integrated cabinet in 30 years, might I hear, Drew Pearson's a motherfucker, Daddy. Or my daddy wants some old business motherfuckers. Motherfuck you too, Daddy. I would like an honest equation from any, at least, grammar school graduate. Is the word son of a bitch less obscene to you than motherfucker? Really? Is it the fact that a Catholic president called all businessmen son of a bitches in a Jewish comic relates motherfucker? If you're interested in the meaning of obscenity, I'm less obscene than the president. If the word motherfucker stimulates you sexually, you're in a lot of trouble. Especially if it's my mother.
A guy told me to suck a bag of dicks. That was interesting. I never heard that before. Total stranger told me to suck a bag of dicks. A whole bag of them. He was angry. He didn't just, you know, suck a bag of dicks like a greeting. You know. Oh, suck a bag of dicks to you too, sir. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a lovely day for sucking several bags of dicks. No, what happened was I cut him off in traffic. It was just one of those things where I had to get in and no one was in my car to judge me and I just fucking, you know, I just decided he's not me, so I don't care what happens to him, and I just cut him off. It was just a shitty thing to do. And it was bad because he was coming fast because he didn't imagine in a million years someone could be that big of an asshole. And so when I did it, he had to slam on his brakes and his dog went in the windshield. It was really very bad. Very bad. And the worst part is when you cut people off, they don't vanish. They're behind you now. So looking back, and he's like, fuck off! He's so mad! And he keeps trying to get next to me because he just wants to see my fucking face. He's just dying. He's like, I gotta see this cocksucker now. I gotta see the fucking face of the piece of shit that just did that to me. And I keep cutting him off because I don't want him to see. I'm ashamed of what I did. Nope, you don't. Finally, we get to a red light, and I gotta face him, only because there's a car in front of me, otherwise I would have fucking blown right through there. But there he is, just fucking furious, and I'm like, I know, it was awful, I shouldn't have done it. I'm not mad, I was wrong, why would I be mad? And he's like, fuck you! And then he starts going like this, because he wants me to roll my window down, like, I'm supposed to take part in my own abuse during this argument, you know. Well, I'm sorry, I don't want to miss this, what do you have to say about me, yes? How rude of me to shut out your anger with my... So I did. I rolled it down. I'm interested. And he goes, hey, asshole! And I'm like, yeah. He says, suck a bag of dicks! And then he drove away. And I was kind of sad that he drove away because I had a lot of questions. That concept of sucking a bag of dicks, it's just weird. Like, first of all, when you picture a bag of dicks, what do you see when you picture a bag of dicks? Is it like a plastic bag and they're all mushing together like chicken parts and with a date written on it with Sharpie, keep it in the freezer? Or is it like a paper bag and they're sticking out like baguettes, kind of like you went shopping, bringing home a bag of dicks for the kids? Here you go, Susie, take a blue one, you know, like a little... I don't know, you, they were hanging in a window somewhere, give me two of those. And how do you suck a bag of dicks? What does he want me to do? Does he want me to take a bag of dicks and suck it? Like, suck the side of the bag? Or does he want me to open the bag and suck each dick individually? And throw the used ones in a bowl, like edamame shells, like that? Do I have to make them all come? You know, like how? I don't know. I never even sucked one dick, so it's not an area that I understand. I've never sucked a dick. Isn't that weird? I've never sucked a dick my whole life. That's weird to me. It is. It's weird. Because almost everybody has sucked a dick. When you think about it, most people on Earth suck dicks. It's true. Because 51% of the population are women, and they suck dicks. Then there's all the gay guys that suck dicks. Then there's all the straight guys who have been forced to suck a dick under various circumstances. So what? There's only like 1,000 of us out there who never blew anyone. Just a bunch of selfish assholes that are fucking getting blown and not blown back, you know? It's like, that's what people do. We all fucking suck dicks, and I haven't done it. And I don't have, like, a big reason not to either. I don't have a policy against sucking a dick. It's not something I'm against doing. I just have never seen a dick I wanted to suck. That's really what it comes down to. I've never seen a penis that inspired me to suck it. Every dick I've ever seen has bummed me out. I hate them. I hate them. They ruin my day when I see them. But that's just so far. I mean, how the fuck do I know? There might be the... But this guy right here might have a beautiful dick. This guy, if I saw his dick, I might go, oh, fuck, that shit's going in my mouth right now. And I just fucking... And I'd have to blow him. Fucking hold him down and blow him. That's the kind of... I would, like, rape blow people. That's what I would, like, hold a guy down and blow him despite him. That's the kind of shit I would do. Just to, you know... I'm just saying I'm not prejudiced. I haven't seen that many. There's billions, literally billions of dicks in the world, and I've seen like 40 at the most, so how the fuck would I know? What, is that too many? Yeah, that's too many, right? 40, Jesus Christ. I'm only 39, that's a dick a year plus another one. Why am I saying 40? That's a lot. That's like 2 bags of dicks right there, at least. 40 dicks? All right.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Oh,
sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. I ain't happy, I'm feeling glad. I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. It's coming on, 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 it's coming on.
Finally, someone let me out of my cage. Now, time for me is nothing cause I'm counting no A's. Nah, I couldn't be there. Nah, you shouldn't be scared. I'm good at repairs and I'm under each snare. Intangible, bet you didn't think so. I command you to panoramic view. Look, I'll make it all manageable. Pick and choose, sit and lose. All you different crews, chicks and dudes. Who you think is really kicking tunes? Picture you getting down in a picture too. Like you lit the fuse. You think it's fictional, mystical, maybe spiritual. Hero who appears in you to clear your view when you're too crazy. Lifeless to those, the definition for what life is. Priceless to you because I put you on the high shit to like it. Gun smoke, you're righteous, but one choke, you're psychic among no possess you with one
dough. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. The future is coming on. Ain't happy. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on.
The essence of basics, without it you make it. Allow me to make this child like your nature. Rhythm, you have it or you don't, that's a fallacy, I'm in them. Every sprouting tree, every child of peace, every cloud and sea. You see with your eyes, I see destruction and demise. Corruption in the skies from the enterprise. Now I'm sucked into your lives through rustle, not in muscle, but percussion he provides with me as a guide. Y'all can see me now cause you don't see with your eye. You perceive with your mind, that's the end. So I'ma stick around with Russ and be a mentor. Bust a few rhymes so mother comes and remember what the thought is. I brought all this so you can survive when law is lawless. Feeling sensations that you thought was dead. No squealing, remember.
Hey, it happened. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. The future is coming on. Hey, I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. My future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. My future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. My future.
Talk about?
I want to talk about
standing our ground.
Standing our ground.
When the police finally move in,
when the police finally move in,
they want their job to go as easily as possible.
They want their job to go as easily as possible.
When our arms are linked,
when our arms are linked,
their job is not easy.
Their job is not easy.
They will lie to you.
They will lie to you.
They will tell you.
They will tell you
that by keeping your arms locked,
that by keeping your arms locked,
you are resisting arrest.
You are resisting arrest.
If you lock arms,
if you lock arms,
and do not let go,
and do not let go,
it will make their job harder.
It will make their job harder.
That does not mean,
that does not mean,
you will be booked.
You will be booked
for resisting arrest.
For resisting arrest.
When they made their way around the circle,
when they made their way around the circle,
the officers had to stop.
Had to stop.
Because two of us,
because two of us,
would not release our hands.
Release our hands.
When they finally came all the way around,
when they finally came all the way around,
they had to work
really hard.
They had to work really hard
to get us apart.
To get us apart.
Many of us, when we were pulled apart, went limp.
Went limp.
It took multiple officers to get us to the bus. None of us were booked.
That they can't throw the book at you.
It just means
that most of the time,
to make their jobs easy,
cops are full of shit.